2 Samuel chapter 1, starting at verse 17. Then David lamented with this lamentation over Saul and over Jonathan his son. And he told them to teach the children of Judah the song of the bow. Indeed, it is written in the book of Jasher. The beauty of Israel is slain on your high places. How the mighty have fallen. Tell it not in Gath. Proclaim it not in the streets of Ashkelon, lest the daughters of the Philistines rejoice, lest the daughters of the uncircumcised triumph. O mountains of Gilboa, let there be no dew nor rain upon you, nor fields of offerings, for the shield of the mighty is cast away there, the shield of Saul not anointed with oil. From the blood of the slain, from the fat of the mighty, the bow of Jonathan did not turn back, and the sword of Saul did not return empty. Saul and Jonathan were beloved and pleasant in their lives, and in their death they were not divided. They were swifter than eagles. They were stronger than lions. O daughters of Israel, weep over Saul, who clothed you in scarlet with luxury, who put ornaments of gold on your apparel. How the mighty have fallen in the midst of the battle. Jonathan was slain in your high places. I am distressed for you, my brother Jonathan. You have been very pleasant to me. Your love to me was wonderful, surpassing the love of women. How the mighty have fallen, and the weapons of war perished. Amen. This is not an easy text upon which to preach. If I weren't going through the entire book, as I've said on numerous occasions before, I would not have selected it as a passage. And yet, it is there. And if something is there in the Bible, it is worthy of our attention. And one of the reasons why it might not normally be chosen to preach upon is that it is incredibly sad. It is an outpouring of grief. We're told in verse 17, then David lamented with this lamentation. It is a formal expression of mourning, a formal expression of grief. David went to the trouble of writing it down. It is well thought through. We have here an outward glimpse into the man's inner spirit. Grieving here for David is not some wailing and emotional mush with extra sentiment. It's well written and it's thoughtful and it is deep. This is the mourning of a godly man. Dale Ralph Davis asks, why should God's people be shoddy in their sorrow? Indeed. David is lamenting over Saul and over Jonathan, his son. Notice he grieves for both of them. Now, for those who do not know, Saul has spent a great many years trying to kill David. And Jonathan has spent the same time trying to save him. You would expect he grieves for Jonathan. In fact, he grieves for Saul as well. He is grieving for his enemy. Why? Well, perhaps out of respect for his position. He was God's anointed king of Israel. Perhaps David, and I suspect he did, loved Saul when he was alive, even though it was hard to express. You know, when the Spirit of God does a work in your heart, you can love the unlovable. You can forgive the unforgivable. And even someone like Saul, a dastardly character if ever there was one, can be mourned for by David. I've been to funerals before, and I'm sure in the eulogies they've been lied about. You'd think they were an angel sent from God. And we shouldn't big people up in such occasions, but neither should we dwell on their faults and failures either. They're not there to defend themselves, after all. David here is prepared in mourning Saul to acknowledge some of the good that he did instead of dwelling on his evil. Again, there is a picture there of grace. God chooses to forget, because of Calvary, the evil that we have done. But one day we'll stand before him, and he'll reward us for the good we've done in the body. In verse 18, there is a command. David does not just write this lamentation, thoughtful though it is. He says, teach it to the children of Judah. By that, he might mean the actual children who were around, but I suspect he means teach it to successive generations. And he calls it the Song of the Bow. And then we're told it was written in the book of Jasher. I'd love very much to have a copy of the book of Jasher. I suspect it's out of print. But we have it here instead. The Book of the Upright. Now the question is, why does David want this piece of text, this psalm, this outpouring of grief, why does he want it to be remembered? Maybe the book of Jasher was a record of Israel's fallen heroes. We don't know. Why teach the children of Judah this outpouring of grief? Well, one day they too will grieve. Unlike perhaps former generations, as a people, I think we are unfamiliar with death. I've only ever seen one dead body. I've never seen anyone die. And maybe teaching this to the children of Judah reminds them of the brevity of life. We have a sundial on the front of our chapel. It says, time flies swift away. We're here today, we're gone tomorrow. And people in our culture are afraid to talk of death. And they eat this and they eat that to try and put it off. And they go jogging to try and delay it. But the people of God are not to be afraid of dying. Death for the people of God, it's not something to be afraid of. We can sing about it. We can talk about it. Because for us who believe, it's a glorious thing. Therefore, teach it to the children of Judah. And it's a reminder, perhaps, that this life is that veil of tears, that valley of weeping. Perhaps David also knew and realized that it's during the difficult times in life that we grow. The growth is in the valley, not the mountaintop. And David wants future generations not to forget the episode on Mount Gilboa, but to know it and sing of it and learn from it. And there are times when we pass through that dark valley. And it's in those times we can say, He was with me. The Lord does so much with His people when they're humiliated before Him. The English are very good at recounting the names and dates of the battles at which we beat the French. We're not so good at remembering those ones when they beat us. But the people of God are not to be like that. They're not just to remember the victories and the good times. They're to recall the tough times as well. Because when we are weak, it's then that we are strong. It's when we are insufficient that His grace proves sufficient. And so David says, children of Israel, never forget that time when Jonathan and Saul were slain, when we were defeated. These children one day will grow into being soldiers themselves. And they're to remember the song of the bow and have it ringing in their ears, even as they run forward to victory. Sometimes defeat is a great inspiration. Even today, the armed forces of Israel swear their allegiance to the state on top of Masada, which was their last stronghold before the Romans exiled them. Remember this defeat, O Israel. The beauty of Israel is slain on your high places. How the mighty have fallen. Human beauty is fleeting. Human might is failing. Several times we hear how the mighty have fallen. Mighty folk are mighty in their day, but they fall. It's a story there of us all. This battle at Gilboa merely hastened the process. Jonathan would have died anyway. Saul would have died anyway. Because all our human virtues and our strength and our achievements, they too fall. In verse 20, he refers to the victors. Tell it not in Gath. Don't talk of it in Ashkelon, the two Philistine cities, lest the women of Philistia rejoice at the victory, rejoice at the death of Saul and Jonathan. Of course, he can't stop them from celebrating. They almost certainly are celebrating. When Martin Luther died, half of Europe celebrated. I pray to God that when we die, Satan celebrates because of the damage we've inflicted upon his kingdom while we were here. And yet David makes the point. The two for whom he grieves, the wicked folk, rejoice in their death. In verse 21, he talks of the physical location of the battle. O mountains of Gilboa, let there be no dew nor rain upon you, nor field of offerings. He curses, as it were, Gilboa, the scene of the defeat. He calls on it to be a barren wilderness, for it witnessed so heartbreaking a scene. Shields were proved to be useless. They were unable to shield those who held them from the blows which fell. Verse 22, from the blood of the slain, from the fat of the mighty, the bow of Jonathan did not turn back, and the sword of Saul did not return empty. David rejoices that these two went down fighting. They did not attempt to run away or hide in a bush. They were soldiers and they died on the battlefield. And yet death still claimed them. I think of the number of powerful believers who are now silenced by death. Calvin, Spurgeon, Luther, whom I've already mentioned. No longer with us, and yet they fought the good fight and they ran the race. None of us in here, I imagine, are ever going to be great famous believers. I doubt there'll be a church in 100 years' time who does a Bible study every few weeks on the hero of church history, and we are the topic. It probably won't happen. But I call on all of us, let's go down fighting. Let's be faithful to the end. May it be said of us, we did not turn back. We did not return empty. When death comes, may we still be holding the sword of the Spirit, never having given up. Saul and Jonathan were beloved and pleasant in their lives, and in their death they were not divided. They were swifter than eagles. They were stronger than lions. David says they were loved and they were lovely. What, Saul? He may have been loved by some. I'm not sure he was lovely. And yet David uses Jonathan here to colour his father. He kind of puts them together. I thank God that when he looks at me, he sees the son. And when he looks at you, he doesn't see your failings. He doesn't see the bitterness. He doesn't see whatever you've done. He sees the righteousness of Christ. It covers you and it colours you. His righteousness is imputed to you and it's imparted to you. It's yours by right and it's given to you freely. Saul, though a horrid man, he's lovely because of the Son. O daughters of Israel, weep over Saul, who clothed you in scarlet with luxury, who put ornaments of gold in your apparel. He doesn't want the unbelieving women to weep, but he does call upon the women of Israel to weep. And the pleasant things that they have, the prosperity, which gave them these lovely clothes and ornaments and that kind of thing, was perhaps because of Saul's government. He calls them to be aware of their heritage. The pleasant assets they have because of those who fell. And I'm glad of our godly heritage. 200 years ago, poor people built a chapel. And I'm glad of that heritage. 500 years ago, men in this country were tied to wooden stakes and burnt to a crisp that we might have the scriptures in our own language. What a godly heritage we have. And he says here, O daughters of Israel, weep for Saul. Thank God for the heritage and the good things he gave you while he was alive. How the mighty have fallen in the midst of the battle. And in verse 25, he moves on to Jonathan, his beloved friend. Jonathan was slain in your high places. I am distressed for you, my brother Jonathan. Oh, you've been very pleasant to me. Your love to me was wonderful, surpassing the love of women. Here now he focuses on his friend, whom he truly misses and grieves for. Out of respect and magnanimity, he mourns for Saul. But in verses 25 and 26, we have a grief pouring out of the heart for one he loved. Jonathan is his brother, his sibling. They weren't brothers, but they were closer than brothers. Modern liberal scholars enjoy reading between the lines when it comes to verse 26, trying to justify their own agenda, trying to suggest that there was a sexual relationship between these two men. But this tawdry interpretation misses the point. The love between these two is greater than physical attraction. That's David's point. If they were physically attracted to each other, the point was worthless. There is a love that can exist between people, which is more than emotional. It's more than biological. It's theological. Let's recall that Jonathan, who was heir to the throne, he should have been the next king of Israel after Saul, desires David to be king instead. And he'll be in second place. Wow. How many heirs to the throne have ever made that offer before? 1 Samuel 23, verse 17. And Jonathan said to David, "Do not fear, for the hand of Saul my father shall not find you. You shall be king over Israel, and I shall be next to you. Even my father Saul knows that." Saul wanted David to be king after him. He wanted Jonathan to be king after him, but he knew David would be. What does Jonathan do? He offers, as it were, the crown to another. He loves David so much, he would rather take second place than deny his beloved the throne of Israel. That is the love that is spoken of here. The love which the world cannot understand. Worldly love is an affection. You give something because you get something back. Here we have a glimpse into God's love for the world, that agape love. For God so loved the world, he gave his only begotten Son, that whosoever believes in him shall not perish, but have everlasting life. The love of God is reflected, even dimly, when we have that kind of love for each other. Imperfect though it is in this life. When we love people, even those we do not like, even those we don't approve of, we come closer to the heart of God than ever we've known. The Queen once said that grief is the price we pay for love. Matthew Henry goes further. He says, the more we love, the more we grieve. And David is grieving because he loved. David is grieving because he was loved. In verse 27, we have that phrase again. How the mighty have fallen. And then there is an aspiration. And the weapons of war perished. The weapons of war did not perish. They prevailed. That's why they died. And David himself, for the rest of his life, was a man of blood, a warrior. So why does he say, and the weapons of war perished? He is hoping, he is anticipating, he is looking forward to the day when weapons will no more be used. He knows that deep down, warfare and killing and violence, they are wrong. And yes, God may use it. And in the dealings of his people, he may commission it, but it never had a place in Eden. Death itself is deeply unnatural. It should never have happened. David looks forward to that day, which Isaiah saw in the second chapter of his prophecy. Now it shall come to pass in the latter days that the mountain of the Lord's house shall be established on the top of the mountains and shall be exalted above the hills, and all nations shall flow to it. Many shall come and say, come, let us go to the mountain of the Lord, to the house of the God of Jacob. And he will teach us his ways, and we shall walk in his paths. For out of Zion shall go forth the law, and the word of the Lord from Jerusalem. He shall judge between the nations and rebuke many people. They shall beat their swords into plowshares and their spears into pruning hooks. Nation shall not lift up sword against nation, neither shall they learn war anymore. David, at a distance, David, as through a glass darkly, beholds the day when great David's greater son will reign upon the earth, and warfare is banished, and peace established. In the gospel, we have that peace now in our hearts, but when Jesus returns, it will cover the earth. How the mighty have fallen, and the weapons of war perished. Teach this song to the children of Judah. Amen.